it's Sheena Shea, and as you know, life can get crazy when it's all happening. But whether you're a mom like me or have a ton of work engagements also like me, everyone should have 2 minutes to spare so everyone can enjoy a Factor meal, a delicious dietitian approved meal that's fresh, never frozen, and gets delivered right to your door. You can choose from calorie smart options, protein plus options, and more. Visit factormeals.com/Shea40 for 40% off your first order.
Exactly. I'm James Earl Jones.
Yes.
I wish I could do that.
James Earl Jones or Morgan Freeman, one or the other. We all want to sound like one of them.
Hi, Andy. Do you love the movies? Did you love the search for the perfect rental on a Friday night? Do you do the new version of this, searching through countless streaming services for the perfect movie on a Friday night? I know we do. Welcome to Mike and Anthony's Soda Pop Culture Club. Me, Mike, along with my co-host, Anthony.
You fucking tracer!
Yes, you are. You know what? You're the tracer to my art. Bring our take on a classic movie every Monday from the 80s, 90s, and beyond, during which we will play the game and open up a six-pack of favorite scenes. We also point out a couple of generic scenes as well. At the end of the movie, at the end of the show, we will rate the movie 1 to 24 cans. One can is an uncomfortable threesome, and 24 cans is a date with Joey Lauren Adams. I mean, come on. But before we get to all that, we want to let you know, we have a Patreon. If you like cool stuff and topics and things like that, then we just want you to join up. You know, that's all we want you to do. So you can get more of the cool stuff. And I'll just tell you, it's the best way. It is the best way, if you want your movie to be done, to get it done. Because we tend to do what people pay us to do. So if you are paying me, I'm going to do what you want us to do. But if you don't want to do all that and you just want us to do your movie, you can do the Fast Pass, which is $25. Send it to our Venmo or PayPal, which is at Soda Pop Culture Club.
And let's point out the important statement there, just so everybody knows. He did say if you pay him, he will do what you want him to
I'm
do.
I'm a whore is what he's going
to
so tell you.
Go wherever you want to with that.
He's saying I am a whore. Now, not only do we have a Patreon, we also have a website, sodapopcultureclub.com. You can buy some merch, make movie suggestions, and see our schedule. A couple more things. Don't forget to share the show with your friends. Check out our Instagram, at Mike and Anthony, where Anthony is probably going to post pictures of him crying when his football team loses from now on. I think that's what's going to happen. You know,
fucking Browns fans, like, they think they're good.
No, I didn't say that. I just think you're probably crying. Actually, we try.
No,
to post-
it wasn't. I just was like, what the fuck happened?
Actually, we try to post clever memes that go along with the movies we discuss. Finally, we need you to go to Apple Podcasts and hit us up for a 5-star or really any star review and a comment. It would be super duper awesome because particularly on Apple, that helps us with people being able to see this lovely show so more of you can have it. And we that really that. Is what we want.
So that's if somebody sends you Venmo, and just in the comments, finger cuffs. How much is it going to, $10 enough?
I don't know. Well, wow, I don't even know. I'll send them a pair.
Remember, No. You will be the finger cuffs.
Oh, well, you know, I don't know if there's enough money for that. But are you ready for the trailer?
I was born ready, bitch.
Quite a long face, Horace.
I'm just having a little girl trouble.
You're pressing charges? I get that a lot.
Holden McNeil was set in his ways. The way he worked. The way he lived. And the way he thought love should be. But then, she showed up.
Let me guess. You like her.
This girl loves me.
There's something you should know.
She got a boyfriend.
Well, no.
Then what's to know, my friend?
And this girl's got a secret that's going to drive him crazy.
I like you, Hogan. I'd really like us to be friends.
What'd I tell you? She just needs the right guy.
What's up?
time to come pick me up, I'll be your best friend.
Now, the only thing standing in Holden's way is the truth.
I can't take this.
Can't take what?
I love you. Not in a friendly way.
How was your pseudo-date?
Okay, I'm telling you, she's never even been with a guy.
You're dating a guy?
So what if it is true?
You know you have no shot at getting her into bed.
I take it that's not good.
Miramax Films presents a comedy that tells it like it feels.
She's been around and seen things we've only read about in books.
So what'd you do last night?
Got lucky.
Chasing Amy.
So there's your trailer. I don't know. It's just a trailer. It is what the movie is.
It's not just a trailer.
What is it then? Tell me.
It's a trailer to Chasing Amy. It's not just a trailer. Jesus.
Oh, well, yeah, it's a trailer Chasing Amy. I guess if you want me to say the name of the movie, I mean, you know.
I mean, yeah, I guess.
I guess, since yeah.
Since it's listed on the title of the podcast, I mean, we can go ahead and say it now.
So did you, I know what it is.
Let's just let the cat out of the bag. Let the fingers out of the cuffs. We'll just say it.
Did you, so when you first watched, how did you watch this? How did you?
This was a rental because this was when so I'll tell you, I remember Clerks, watching that on Showtime.
Yes.
I remember first seeing that on Showtime.
I rented Clerks.
Mallrats, Chasing Amy. Those were both rentals when they came out on, VHS for Mallrats. I think.
This was
Chasing Amy. I don't know if that was DVD or maybe it was DVD for
They
both.
Did put out a Criterion edition of Chasing Amy, so on DVD. Strangely. But no, I same thing. I believe I rented this one for sure. I did not, although I did want to see it in the theater, but you gotta understand my wife is not a Kevin Smith fan. So there's
that's okay.
So she getting her to go watch one of those movies.
Yeah.
Her radar goes up. Isn't this the guy who did Mallrats? Because for some reason she doesn't like that movie.
So that's what puts her off?
That she hates Clerks and Mallrats? Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let her have her Hallmark shit then.
Well, whatever. You know, the Kevin Smith has a specific style, obviously, and it comes through in this movie a little bit.
So if he ever directs a Hallmark movie, what the fuck's she going to do?
But no, here's the thing. He is an executive producer on Good Will Hunting. And she loves that movie. So I tell her, you understand that is technically a Kevin Smith movie too.
There you go.
So I say, John, you do love a Kevin Smith movie. So there you go. Back toward that
one. Oh boy. You took that side of the finger cuffs, huh?
Yeah. Whichever. Wow. Oh, hey. Hey, buddy.
Hey, oh, hey.
Oh, hey. I don't know about that. But so, yeah, I just think I remember seeing this back then. It felt like it was billed as like the grown-up Kevin Smith movie. You know, like we were taking a different direction in our life because he had just failed. People thought he had failed with Mallrats and really just
not at all.
It was like other movies that we've seen, like Office Space and things like that, where they weren't failures. They actually had the right comedy and tones for the time, but the people who wanted to see it just couldn't go to the theater at the time. You know, it's like they just weren't, or it was a little bit slightly ahead of where it needed to be. It's like not just timing sometimes, it's just awful.
No, it's, I just think it's those kind of movies where you're not getting the big studio budget behind the marketing and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, that's what's going to happen with it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely not big studio
budget.
It's
not like fucking Wild Wild West where the studio's pushing the hell out of it.
Well, there's a fact, I didn't even have it in our notes, but there's a fact where he said that Mallrats really was just an $8 million audition for this film. So all the people are in it. That
there
were
you
in
go.
That, so,
see how that works.
So yeah, you spent $8 million just to find a perfect cast for a movie that was a little different on that one. But do you want to play your favorite thing? Do you want to do your favorite thing and play the game?
Do you want to play the game first, or do you want me to give the breakdown?
Well, it's up to you.
Don't we usually do that first? You fucking tracer.
You're the tracer to my ink.
Yeah, you're the finger to your cuffs. All right, so here we go. Breakdown by the Numbers, directed by Kevin Smith and starring Ben Affleck, Joey Lauren Adams, Jason Lee, Kevin Smith, Jason Mewes, and several others from the well-known and beloved View Askewniverse. Chasing Amy was released on April 4th, 1997, taking in $12 million at the box office against a $250,000 budget. It scores 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb and 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. So there you go.
Yeah.
Now we can play your stupid game.
And usually we do the game before this, but that's all right. Okay, so.
I feel like I do whatever. I don't care.
Well, it doesn't matter. I can cut this however I want.
We reversed it. It's fine.
Anyways, we're going to play the game, and you know the game, Anthony. The game's where I'm going to read you three movie reviews. One of them is fake, two of them is real. You have to guess the fake one, and you too, listening along, can play the game as well. And if you want, you can always let us know how well we fool you, because we're cool with that. I'm down with that. What about you? Are you down with that, Anthony?
I'm not down with it, but I'll do it.
You'll do well. Hey, Anthony is up for anything. So
it's
if you
part
make
of the
him
script,
a,
so whatever.
If you want to make him a finger cuff, he's down. That's all
you
I'm
better
talking
be putting more than $25 in that Venmo if you want me to do that.
So you guys know it's higher than 25. That's all you got to know.
I don't even take my belt off for less than 40.
Okay, 41 is what you got put in there. All right, are we ready?
Sure.
All right. First review, or actually, I'll just read them off. David Pan of Pan This Movie. Chasing Amy is nothing but a heterosexual conversion fantasy wrapped in gay slurs. Dennis Schwartz. Dennis Schwartz Movie Reviews. Not everything worked or made sense, but the characters and their problems seemed real. Susan Stark. Detroit News. Often funny, but ultimately wrenching. Jeez, I could smell
them. I'm going to say the first one.
And why is that?
Just because I think it was a little too overdone.
Huh. Okay.
Something you would write.
Oh, okay. Well, you are right. You got it correct, sir. You did guess the correct one. But I want to let you know, while those may be my specific words, there are many reviews with that same sentiment that are just as overdone. So it wasn't about... I thought I made a great character of David Pan of Pan This Movie. I thought that was a great thing. I thought you might believe in that more than anything.
That sounded too fake that it had to be real.
Well, David Pan is one of the characters in Big Trouble in Little China. So there you go. Not Lopan. Nice Lopan is the main guy. This is David Pan. He's
nice try, dickhead. You didn't get me this time.
Yeah, but you know, but that, you know, hey.
Winner.
Yeah, he's a winner. I think he's
a loser. Okay, you know why I knew it was fake?
Why?
Because you added too much depth and shading to your review.
You're the tracer, buddy. You're the tracer, bitch.
I don't think so. I'll put my fucking pen in your thorax.
Whatever. Come at me, bro. Come at me.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
You'd like that. At you or on you?
Oh, whoa, hey. Hey.
Hey.
Just throwing that out there. But so what is this movie about? Just give a quick synopsis so people know what it is.
Okay. It's a tale of conversion. How about that?
Oh gosh, don't even say that.
Boy meets girl, falls in love with girl, tries to convert girl to like boys, and then finds out about girl's past, can't deal with it because he's a typical dude and just can't get shit like finger cuffs out of his head.
You know,
he wants to have a three-way with another dude and nobody's friends at the end. There you go.
That is so true. And nobody's friends at the end. Nobody. Except
for
Jay and Silent Bob.
There's no more shared moments at the end.
Jay and Silent Bob are still friends with Holden, right?
You know what's really funny? To me anyways, I think the end of this movie is where you should have had the end of Mallrats with Jay, Silent Bob, and Suzanne walking down the highway.
You're right. This would that
should have gone at the end of this.
Well, my thoughts are probably his ambitious ideas were that Mallrats was going to be that success and be the springboard into a Jay and Silent Bob movie. But because it didn't do that, he had to make this, which had a little bit of success, that then put him back in the game to make that movie.
I'm just saying, I think it would be more fitting, though, in general.
Oh, I agree.
You know, two guys and a monkey walking down the street after everything we just saw. It would have fit.
Questioning your concepts of love, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Bestiality.
So, yeah, this movie basically is about strange relationships, or not strange, just strained, I guess, is a better way of putting it. It's definitely not, I don't know, typical. So let's get into some favorite things. Let's talk about this movie. Let's get some scenes. I obviously this movie, there are some great things. And I always feel that directors at this time, and maybe Kevin Smith fell victim to it. He has his own words, but I feel that maybe they fell victim to the Tarantinoism of movies, because he tends to, just like Tarantino, have concepts that are strange, brought into a movie and talked about and have a really dialogue driven scene. And one of those, one of my six packs, is when they're at the con and the one guy goes into the Star Wars story of being a racist story and how black people deep inside really want to be a white man.
See, I don't think it's an issue. I think it's great
I think it's great, but I think it's biting on other style a little bit.
Not necessarily, because Kevin Smith even has said before, like Clerks and a lot of these bullshit, crazy conversations come up because it's the kind of shit they would talk about in real life.
Yeah, he did say that.
You know what I mean?
That's
what they talk about. They come up with this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure we've had conversations like that before.
Random
weird theories
all of our conversations are right here. So I don't know, man. Yeah, all of our conversations are right here. So I don't think we have that. We don't have that at all.
The only time we have conversations, ladies and gentlemen, just so you know.
Yeah, right. That's the only time we have a deep conversation about movies. Because, I'll say this so they understand, like, if you do a podcast with someone where you talk about movies, the one thing you don't want to talk to them when you're not doing the podcast, the one thing you don't want to talk about is movies, because you might waste all your good shit talking.
You got to save it.
Yeah. If I'm going to fuck him up, I got to do it on tape. That's what I got to do. I got to make him cry on tape or it doesn't feel right.
Right.
So you had a six pack here as well with the
same tape. There's no tape. What tape?
The digital.
This is 2022, bitch.
The cloud.
Within that scene, my first six pack. What's a Nubian?
Yes, I love that.
Fucking hilarious. Shut the fuck up.
I love how that. But you know, there's some things about that. I mean, Hooper. Things about that scene. How, when you look at it now, at the end of that scene, what's he end up doing? Getting angry at the white man and pulling out a gun and then clearing out the hall. That right now, that scene would not be made today. I mean,
probably not.
Not that way. Not as a joke.
Not that way. Yeah.
Not as a joke.
Right.
Because there's too many people triggered. You know,
literally and figuratively. Yes. You know, I gotta say, so literally, like, his theory though is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
The Vader thing.
Yeah.
Considering Vader is voiced by a black man.
Yeah, he is, but it's a white man. His thing was. Deep inside, we all want to be an old white guy, is what he said.
But it's kind of funny if you think about it. You could also say maybe deep inside, white people all want to be black because the white guy is dressed up as Vader and using a black guy's voice.
We all want to sound like James Earl Jones, don't we?
Right.
I mean, I wish we did. I'm James Earl Jones.
Yes.
I wish I could do that.
James Earl Jones or Morgan Freeman, one or the other. We all want to sound like one of them.
Hi, Andy. Let's go to Suwatineo.
Stan Watts, Neo.
Whatever. Just get
Don't
there.
Don't misquote shit.
Especially, hey, we haven't done that movie
in a
yet.
Horribly
so, hey.
Done voice, because that was bad.
Hi, Andy. We got to get to the chopper. Get to San Watanel.
There, that was better.
Hi, Andy. Kermit the Frog here. No, I can do them all. see, we should work on voices, and then we can entertain them a different way. And we could read these, we could do these whole things as like,
okay,
I can do
we'll
it as
do
Kermit,
time,
and you can
yeah.
do it as Gonzo. Like,
say what's missing, bitch. Hey. Give me pizza crit.
Beavis, you gotta quit doing that. You know, I know this is a side, but funny thing is, the other night I turned on Beavis and Butthead, and my wife watched and actually enjoyed it.
Really?
Yes, she laughed. That's so crazy.
She fucking hates Mallrats.
Yeah, I get it. But you know, the
Mallrats is pretty much a live action Beavis and Butthead.
The Beavis and Butthead is good. I'm just saying. I'm just gonna tell you right now, the
Beavis
new one
Butthead is great.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. It's mindless it humor me. That we needed. It's Gen X giving its best product.
It shaped my life.
Yes, it did. It did. I tell you, it did. Did for me. Now I want to get back to the movie. We were talking about Hooper. I think for me and throughout this movie, Hooper is like the spiritual center for Holden and Banky. Each one of them, he has a different type of relationship with Holden. It's more the deeper. Let's talk about your feelings. And he always tells him the right thing, but Holden doesn't listen. And then Banky, it's like Archie's gay. it's like
Archie
Banky,
and
like,
Jughead were lovers.
It's he does the whole scene thing where he's talking about the that. So I think it's funny how they each have their own relationship with them, but he kind of understands both of them. And it feels like he's the one bringing them along on the story throughout the movie. It's just kind of weird that way. But you know, but you really don't see him that much, in my opinion. You know,
you don't,
especially after a certain point. It's kind of a crazy thing. But he's good.
That's why you got to take that advice when it's there, because it's not always there.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, you have another six pack in here. I can't remember. Well, you have a six pack. I moved it. Pardon me.
Okay,
moved to the front, and it's about the Jaws scene.
Jaws, yes. Banky and Alyssa trading sex scars,
yeah,
stories, just like in Jaws, which is really funny because literally last weekend we watched Jaws.
Oh wow!
With my 7-year-old, it was his first horror movie. My wife picked it to watch.
Yeah,
with him, so I was like, okay, cool, we'll do that. So then when that scene comes on, all I think about is Chasing Amy.
Yeah. You know what I think about when I watch Jaws is that was probably one of the last good movies that Richard Dreyfuss done before he ruined his career with cocaine. Because in the 80s, he did trash movies compared to like Goodbye Girl, Jaws, Close Encounters.
Let It Ride was pretty good. I like that.
But he did a lot of cocaine, and they say he would have had a much better career if he
had. Oh, yeah, he definitely would have.
I mean, you know. What was a stakeout? I mean, all right, that's okay. It's okay.
Well,
I mean,
what? Hey, yeah. Dirk Diggler would have had a much better career had he not done so much cocaine. So there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah, I agree. But I just say, but now you talk about movies, scenes, and things. The one thing about this movie is you said earlier the Viewisk universe.
Yes.
You like that. Here's the thing. Back when this came out, I was like you. I was like, oh my gosh, they're talking about all these things from all the other movies. And I enjoy that, but what bothers me the most and all that is the continuity that is ignored. They're talking about characters that were played by people who are in this fucking movie,
yeah,
existing
so
still in this universe. And that really, it would be like Chris Evans or someone like in Marvel being like, in another movie, like, oh, that Captain America guy, and, you know, he's not Captain America, he's some other dude, you know. It just bothers me.
It's part of the fun, though. It doesn't bother me because I love these actors so much that I want to see them in future films in the Viewisk universe, and I don't care who they're playing. I think it's great. Every fucking person, like, that bugged you that they mentioned Shannon Hamilton, but every other person in that movie was playing somebody else.
I know you have you have some notes on that. You have Brian O'Halloran. Yeah.
Yes, he's playing his fucking third character in as many films by Kevin Smith.
True.
Jason Lee is playing Banky instead of the guy that sent Shannon Hamilton to jail.
But what were they talking about? But Banky talking about being with Brandy Svenning.
Yes.
That was so wrong. When you look at the continuity, because she's obviously never been with anybody but Jeremy London, whatever his character was. So, you know, it's just.
But that's the best part then, because you've got the same guy playing that guy that fucked Brandy Svenning, who was Jason, his best friend in Mallrats.
And then Rick Darris still gets to have Joey Lauren Adams no matter which character she is.
Yeah.
Rick Darris, one at a gaming table, one finger cuffs. Do you want to explain that? Now I do. I think it's time that I want to apologize to our audience.
About what?
I don't know. I personally never intended to drop consecutive episodes of hyper-sexualized movies.
Whatever.
It's not really a subject matter that I enjoy.
Bullshit.
Diving into that deep.
Fucking liar.
And that's what she said. Banky. So I just want to let you know that this is not what we tried to do. I mean, you know, that's not what we had tried to do. Matter of fact, I didn't remember this movie being as sexual as it would.
He's mapped this out for like 2 years. He's been ready for this. This is on purpose, people.
Yeah. Who? What?
You.
What's on purpose?
All you want to do is do movies where people are doing stuff to each other and there's lots of talk and showing of dicks and stuff.
Now, I do want to talk about something, though, that and this is the reason I'm giving that is because I am going to go into a conversation about something here. And it's about Banky, with his many faults, which I will touch on later, does make a good point early in the movie about wanting his partner to helping out with navigating sex. Because I am no sex therapist, but I would guess, based on my understanding of the male ego, that men think they know what to do. Women most likely know they don't know what they are doing. And I feel if all parties concerned are going for the same thing, a pleasurable experience, it would behoove us both as sexual partners to help the situation by just fucking communicating. I'm not sure if this was a 90s thing and before problem, or is it still a thing today? This, like, I don't know.
This is caveman shit. This is from the dawn of time. Okay.
You're saying the dawn of time, the woman's been trying to, been laying there going, fuck
no,
you.
No, what I'm saying is, I'm sure, yes, some girls won't help you out, tell you what to do. But the vaginal playground of a woman is unique and different. Like snowflakes, no two are alike. So when advice is offered, you take the advice. You take the directions.
But I'm saying it should be given more often than often.
Well, hey, that just depends on the person, I guess. If they don't give advice, then that's their problem too. I get it. But for a guy being a typical guy and not to listen and think that they know what they're doing, it's bullshit. Because it's just like a guy, same concept, drive around for 2 hours instead of stopping to ask for directions when you could have gotten there in 10 minutes instead of spending an hour and a half dicking around.
If the guy knows a shortcut for that gets him to where he needs to go faster, but you don't get to see the things you want to see, he's going to take the shortcut because you never told him to take the turn at the road. You know, that's just how it is. That's how it is.
But the guy thinks he knows where he's going.
And he may get to the destination, but he forgets that the journey matters.
Every guy thinks, like, I'm a human Garmin. I know where I'm going. Hang on.
Oh, male stubbornness, like you said. So yeah, our male stubbornness, you're right, doesn't allow us to fully explore sometimes and open up our mind. We need our mind to be opened up for us. And ladies, just help us out is what we're trying to say. You know, if you don't take us to a class, but don't help us study or give us directions. That's all I'm saying.
No. You mean don't give the test if you don't give the study materials.
That's right. That's what I mean. Yeah, yes, you got
it. So basically you're saying you'd like to fuck a teacher's aide.
Once upon a time, that may have been on the table if I had so been inclined.
Okay.
Now I want to get into some things.
You're talking here. Like really a teacher's aide, or are we talking a 65-year-old librarian?
Yeah. Oh, whoa. Hey, brother. You never know. I mean, I might have the magazine, you know, the oldies but goodies magazine.
You probably do.
One of Banky's stuff that he was going to take with him on the road trip. It's probably in his hoard that he had there.
Man, that was a collection, wasn't it?
Yeah, but not often. You had that quote.
Sometimes I like the idea of a woman with a horse.
Yeah. I mean, is that foreshadowing for Clerks 2 a little bit?
I don't know if it was foreshadowing or it was just like, you know, the spark that led to that whole idea.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like,
I don't know. We're not there yet, though. No spoilers.
But I'm just saying it's one of those things that is just a concept he couldn't get out of his head, because a lot of the things that are in these movies, especially about sexuality and dating, tend to cross over a little bit.
And
I think, you know, and I'm going to get into that. So a little bit more, but not at this time. Now, it's something that aged well, because, you know, this movie ultimately is about Holden and Alyssa's relationship and how he's trying to, he falls in love with a gay woman and all that. And then she actually ends up falling in love back. But something that ages well and is when he goes, when she goes home and she has to, I don't know what, she's sending out promotional materials and she's with her girlfriends. And they say, hey, you're playing the pronoun game. And when you think of that, how many people today lose their shit about pronouns? Different reasons, but it's like it was always out there like a thing in some way. The pronouns were there, but for different reasons, always somebody ready to lose their shit over it. It just seems, in my opinion.
It's because people are homophobes.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, especially Banky. But but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that that just seems like pronouns have it's aged well in a bad way, in my opinion.
Banky's not a homophobe, though.
Let's not get into that yet.
He's already explained, like, gay men, he understands that.
Yeah, but but he has passive aggressive tendencies.
Yes, I know.
Now I want to, but one of my favorite things in this movie, other than pronouns aging well, because that's such a conflicting thing. I mean, I've seen things where people like, there's this one Instagram I follow, a guy who points out shitty people on dating things, on dating sites. And the person says, I don't like you if you tell me what pronoun I have to use. I'm like, people just say that up front. It's like, fuck you. Fuck you. I mean, what if you look at me, you're going to say what I am. And okay, I don't mind that. I've always said, you can call me whatever pronoun you think I am. If I have to correct you, I will.
There's I'm just going to call from now on. I just call people by their name. That's it.
That's it. You know, but you know, what's funny is I rarely do that. Like if you hear me in conversation, I'll say my brother-in-law or my wife or my mother. I never say their name. I don't know why.
I think everybody does that though.
Because I feel when I say the name, they'll like, oh, they'll ask me, well, who is that to you? So then I end up having to answer that question inevitably. But if everybody. I just say my wife, they don't give a fuck what her name is. You know,
everybody does that though.
That's yeah, how but you I've been pointed out by my family that I do that in a way that seems like I don't acknowledge them as being as close of a human being to me as they are.
Well, that you do that though, because that's true.
I do.
Call your daughter kid.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, you do.
Hey, but what call my wife woman? I do know that.
Yes, you do that too, which also that's a whole nother set of problems you have.
She has a name for me, but that's all right.
I'm sure she's got more than one.
Now I want to get into what I was getting into. I'm sorry, I got sidetracked. Six pack for me is cameos.
Yes,
just a lot of the different cameos we have in here. You got the Matt Damon and Dante.
Snoochie-boochies.
And Dante, or what'd you call him, Brian O'Halloran. Casey Affleck, the antagonizer at the con,
Little Shaver,
was in there. And he ends up winning an Oscar later on. So that's a,
not
you know,
with,
no, Manchester by the Sea. But
yes, and that's a whole nother thing. We're not even going there.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a little more modern for
that
us.
That was an Oscar win shrouded in a lot of controversial bullshit going on.
Which is, you know, but when you think about it, this movie has a lot of shit that I would say has controversial bullshit about how people would view it if it were made today the exact same way. Like it would be people would look at it and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe this thing says these things and does these things. So to me, that is interesting that he's in two different movies that has its own issues.
But you know, see, I don't know. Like when I'm even now watching this movie, the things people are talking about and the way they discuss them with their friends, I think that's still done. I don't think that's like people are like, oh my God, I can't believe they're saying that. People still do that.
I don't think so. Not completely.
I absolutely disagree. No, I'm just saying.
Disagree.
Homophobes are still homophobes. Racists are still racists. Like people that will have those discussions, they still have them because the sentiment is still there, no matter how the language you're using.
I think it's funny. You know, I work in an office, and you know, one of the things I would say when you work in a setting with a bunch of different people, that someone once in a while will say something to you and you're having a conversation that's pretty cool. And then they'll say something that's like, you're like, oh, whoa, did they just say like a thing that's like totally low key, like racist or homophobic or sexist? And then you don't know, do I keep engaging or I just turn my back and go, oh, I'm done with that conversation now. It's like, and I feel that sometimes this movie's kind of like that. It's like that. It's like, oh, this was okay. But then it starts saying shit that's, you know, should I turn my back on this now? You know, the conversation's not right for the room anymore. That's kind of how I feel about it.
But.
That's right. That's deep shit. You don't get that from me often.
No, not ever. Your wife never gets that from you.
boom.
So let's. But basically, I think as far as pretty much any of that conversation you're talking about.
Yeah.
Is coming from Banky.
I know that.
Like nobody else is having these conversations that you would say that about, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the rest of the movie, outside of just the shit that Banky's interjecting, that can also be made. You don't have issues with that, right?
Correct. But, you know, and I've given my six packs. I got my cameos. I got my Darth Vader thing. Another six pack of mine, I'll go into that, is Jan and specifically Silent Bob. Because there are things that I really like in this movie. And Jay and Silent Bob is one of them. And Bob specifically, because I think, and here's the thing with that. I think that Kevin Smith makes movies, at least sometimes it feels this way, to make one profound point or joke or payoff. Like he has this profound thing he wants done. And this, it was to express through Bob a tale of woe or lost love. Like he wanted, because he felt he could deliver that message, because to me it is the best scene and most believable scene in the movie. I also love in that particular scene that he had a dream of being a Vegas dancer, because who doesn't have that dream? That's it made me think Showgirls. Anytime I hear that, I think Showgirls.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
I think Showgirl. Like, oh, who doesn't want to be Elizabeth Berkley rocking her bod in that pool? So yeah,
you know, it's funny. I mean, really, I think it's interesting. It's kind of funny that you know, when you're talking about how there's so much conversation in here that wouldn't work today and everything.
Yes.
But at the same time, Kevin Smith, I mean, Clerks and Chasing Amy, specifically those two, it comes down like at the very end, his speeches are basically about, you know, respect women.
Strangely.
Clerks, you know, he's got, you know, there's a million fine women out there, but most of them don't bring you lasagna to work. Most of them don't just cheat on you.
Yeah, strangely, I would strangely. Say. Well, when you look at the movie as a whole, you see that because we'll get into some takes now and some generics and things.
All right.
When you look at the movie as a whole, you see that this was early for him in his thinking, and his great point is great, but it's wrapped in a juvenile concept of love or even whatnot, like the whole conversion thing and the whole, you know, oh, lesbians, oh, you know, like it feels like a 13-year-old said, oh, well, here's my idea of what love is and how this would happen. And that it's kind of like, but he has the one profound point. That's why it's the best scene. Like, I just don't get that particular thing. That's my thoughts.
Hold on.
Like,
no, I completely disagree though.
Yeah.
I think the whole movie, like, obviously it's different than pretty much anything you'd seen up to this point with that subject matter and the context, but like you're putting all this in, but again, like, I think you're looking at it from a straight male's point of view. You know,
I'm looking at it as a straight male who can't pretend to understand how people of another sexuality would start to deal with that. I wouldn't inject myself into thinking this is my fantasy of how it would play out.
Well, no, because if it's your fantasy of how it would play out, it'd be a happy ending for everybody.
Well, it's not, I would agree.
Right. So ending. He's showing again.
I don't know
how different people are dealing with different situations in this movie that you wouldn't have necessarily thought about.
Well,
not seen this movie.
Well, here's the thing. I've got some generics I'm going to go over in a moment.
This is like
we'll get deeper into that. You know,
walk a mile in my stilettos kind of movie.
Here's something I want to go into something I don't understand. And that is the nickname Finger Cuffs. How does it get into the yearbook? That means she liked it enough that she wrote it in her little senior bio to put it in the fucking yearbook. For someone who is so scarred over that moment and didn't find what she was looking for at the time, she chose later on that year to put in cuffs?
Nope.
Go ahead. Tell me how finger cuffs gets on your bio.
Don't overestimate the fact that there could have been a rogue editor working on the yearbook.
That wouldn't happen.
To do it with Alyssa Jones. Because that could happen. Hey.
I guess it could, but you know there would be some suing and some people would have lost their shit over that back then. And now even.
I was like, like the Chinese trap, huh? Oh, that's funny. I think, remember, this is her in high school where she's still trying to figure herself out. So yes, trying a lot of different things. A lot of different people. So yeah, that's like at that
you
time,
identify yourself with that.
But again, you almost in a way take it as like a badge of honor. It's like, oh, that's what I'm known for. But it's kind of like you're in on the joke. But you know what I mean?
I would need to know more about how that got in that yearbook, because to me, there has to be a part of you that's like, well, I thought those things were things I didn't want to be known for.
Later, I'd rather on. Be. But I don't think at that point, no.
I don't know. I think a lot of regret in her life. That's why she doesn't live where she came from anymore. She moved to the city because fuck those people.
No, she moved to the city because she already did.
Well, that's true. She did fuck those people. Now, I got another one for you.
All right.
She's from the Jersey Shore. How had she never played a fucking game of skee ball? And she lived on the skee-ball capital of the world.
I got
don't know what the fuck skee-ball is. Come on.
How many lesbians do you know that play games with balls in their hand?
Well, she wasn't a lesbian back in when she's fucking Rick Darris and Akoi. I mean, that's not, she wasn't a lesbian then.
She
could have went down to the docks with them and thrown some balls around.
Just saying. Well, I think she did, just not skee-ball. We've heard she has done that with them.
You think she's busy back in the day. I get it. But no, they, it's just like, I don't know. It would be like living in Vegas and never being to casino and not knowing what it is. She didn't even know what it was. I had the concept of it.
I think we've already learned throughout this movie at this point that she was busy doing a lot of other things.
You think that's it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, now I want to get into...
You know, you got to understand. I mean, to you, it's like if you met a guy that had never played 2K. Like, what the fuck? How is that possible?
It'd be more like meeting somebody who never played basketball and never heard of the game basketball. But I would assume they're not from the United States, for one. And they were in a country where it was closed off. Because... The games themselves, if you live near it, you're going to know about it. It's like, it'd be like growing up in Germany and never knowing what soccer is or any European country, because they love that shit. So it's just what it is.
I could see, like,
Growing up in the U.S. and not knowing football.
I'm sure. All right. So you're comparing skee ball to football.
Well, I mean, in relative to that area, the boardwalk, because that's what they're famous for. They have the boardwalk with all the arcades and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. It is like
underneath
that.
The boardwalk.
Well, yeah.
On top of the boardwalk. She's always underneath.
Boardwalk. Yes. Out of the sun. We'll be having some fun. You like that song? That's an old one. Oldie but a goodie.
Like Bruce Willis's version. I remember that.
Oh my God, Bruno. Don't say Bruce
Bruno.
Willis.
Bruno. Sorry.
When
Bruno.
He sings, he's Bruno.
He's Bruno. Not Mars, just Bruno.
That's right, the original Bruno with no fucking Mars on the end. What the fuck? Anyways, I've got a generic here I want to go into, and I know you hate it that I'm going to say it. It's Banky. He's a generic. All of it, every bit of it. He's now that I watch this, because I was in my 20s then, I had a different outlook, a different mindset. But now that I watch it, I watch Banky and I go, oh shit, cringe factor. It makes me cringe the fact that I may have thought this guy was a great dude. And I was wrong.
So I don't hate that at all. I just completely am on the opposite side because that's my other six pack is Banky.
I know. That's why I didn't make you bring it up when we were doing six packs.
Here's the thing. It's not, you gotta understand, he's the idiot character in the movie.
Yeah, obviously.
That's the point. That's why anything like derogatory or bad that shouldn't be said in real life, Kevin Smith can funnel through Banky in this movie.
Yes.
Like that's, you know, so that's why you can't take it seriously because of who's saying it. But you also, you know, he does have his redeeming qualities too, because he's trying to protect his friend. Because he knows he's going to get hurt.
Yes, he does.
So maybe he doesn't have the right way of going about that or take, you know, use the best tactics for that. But that's his end game.
His whole demeanor is about who he is, though. While all his intentions are the best, he still is homophobic,
right?
And bashes on gay people. Because Banky or Holden even corrects him. You don't have to gay bash. He even brings it up in the movie. So he has a problem.
I agree with that. Yes,
but you know, but here's the thing.
I never thought he was a good dude, though. When you're saying that, no, I never thought he was a good dude. He was obviously very misguided and has a lot of issues. But I got to say, why I make him a six-pack, though, is because Jason Lee does such a great job in that role. His delivery with everything and the way he plays that character is awesome. And it could just be Jason Lee because Brody was awesome in Mallrats, too. So
I will say the thing about that, the acting part with Jason Lee, is there was a fact I didn't put it on here. Where Ben Affleck kind of helped guide him because Ben Affleck felt he was overdoing it in scenes, like over banking, I guess. So this is a dialed back version, I think, a little bit.
Okay. That's interesting.
So there you go. But I want to get into this. So I got another generic and I think with the Banky thing kind of fits, all three of mine kind of fit with Banky, him being my first thing. But my second one is I don't think the gay angle was needed. I don't think it was, especially since the movie, I got a thing here, especially since the movie mostly had juvenile attitudes towards sex in the movie. Because you could have had the person be straight and still have some of the same things happen, and it would have just fine.
Okay.
Because I think, honestly, having the gay part of it in there was, to me, once again, and here's where you're going to find that my movie reviews lately are kind of representative of how I really think about the movie, where it's a gay conversion fantasy. And instead of treading that water, or trying to tread that ground that can really offend people, you could still make this story and it be just as good and just as fun and not have that part of the story, like not have it be a gay person that you're going after, because she could have kissed a guy, had another guy that she was seeing. She could have done many different things. She could have got scars sucking dick. She doesn't have to get him.
She could have, but
munching rug.
Okay. So you are just saying, I'd rather she was just blowing people.
I'm saying that rather than, I'm saying if you're, I'm not saying that that's necessarily what I would want if it were me personally. No.
I'm just saying you're getting on a little bit of a Church of Latter-day Saints soapbox here kind of thing.
Oh, yes.
Didn't have to have gay stuff in the movie. I would have been fine.
I don't mean it that way. I meant because the way they go about it is a fantasy of gay conversion, which is very offensive. That all she needs is dick. You know, that's the way the movie feels.
No, it's not what it feels. That's the idiot character saying that in the movie.
Yes.
And then guess what happens at the end? No, she didn't. Because she's with a girl at the end.
We don't know.
Yeah, we do. She's got a girlfriend at the end.
Nah, we don't know what happens after. Like we know that the movie, they don't end up together in the movie. But you know, as you know, with these kinds of movies, they meet up. He says hi, and then we don't know. Something could have happened after she reads the. I think you're supposed to assume that she reads the fucking comic and it's so great, and then probably calls him back and
whatever. Shut up.
What?
You're not coming off well here when you say this. Because like all you're saying right now is because they had gay people in it, or they had the gay element in it. It could have been made without that. Any movie with gay element could have been made without it.
Yeah, not necessarily. My thought, try to make Priscilla Queen of the Desert without that. So my thoughts on this are that I think it was kind of shoehorned for shock value. I don't feel that it was an honest. Like the story could be made without that. The story didn't lend itself that it had to be a gay character, which is not a bad thing. Being gay or not gay, I don't care about that part. It's the thing that where you then co-opt that with a conversion fantasy, like where you're basically, it feels like you're trying to say, oh, I'm the guy, I'm going to conquer this. Like they say in the movie,
no.
You know, that's what it ends up feeling like, even when it doesn't try to. That's what I'm saying.
I don't agree with that at all, though.
That's just how I feel.
He's not trying to convert her.
No.
But fell in love with her, and he wants to be
with Kevin Smith's subconscious is.
Uh-uh. Kevin Smith, he made a movie because he's like, what if this happened? And he made a movie about it. So there you go.
I get that, but his subconscious is
I don't think there's anything saying like, let's throw all this in here because just to mess with people.
Yeah. I'm not saying that he should. Here's the thing. When we watched it back then, I didn't have these feelings about it. I thought it was a good story about how people can be who they are all the way through. And they can, at the end, not be together because, they had a moment and that was it. I get that. That was fine. I didn't mind it then. I thought, but then when you look at it in today's context, it's like it didn't have to be that way because it felt like it was more of a juvenile understanding of love and sexuality, and that's what it feels like to me. Like it's just somebody trying to work through their own thoughts of what this would be like if I tried to do this thing or this thing here.
I don't agree because I think the way I look at it, I see like so many interesting points of view in it. Because first of all, look at Holden's character. He was fine when he thought she was only a lesbian. He was the only guy she had ever been with.
Well, I would agree the pettiness of men is real.
Okay, so we've got that. We've also got Alyssa through, you know, her eyes with everything. Like the confusion she has and what she's going through, which I'm going to throw in now, then my generic too.
Yeah.
Was when she was doing her... promotions with her.
Yeah, the pronoun game.
Yes. Yeah. And when she finally revealed that it was a guy that she was in love with. See, this is where I give this as my generic just because it's very interesting to me that this group of women that are lesbians, I mean, we're assuming this the way, you know.
Yeah.
The way the conversation is. so, excuse me, they.
Queer people.
Okay, yes. They are ostracizing her now, basically, giving her shit for being with a man. But they are hanging out together. I would imagine a big connection they have is being queer and what they've gone through. So they have that bond. I'm sure that's part of it. And I'm sure most, if not all of that group have already gone through this when they came out. So being ostracized from certain family, friends, what have you. So now they're doing it to one of their friends. It's like a little hypocritical there.
I agree. And the part of that that really gets you is that you can be a part of being queer is bisexual. So maybe they may had a misunderstood her the true nature of what she was into, what love was to her. She might love everything, not just one thing. And that's right. And that you're right. And that is true. So. Thing is, this movie doesn't go into that. Wouldn't that's the story, if you ask me, if you're going to go do a story about it's because, you know, in a community that seems I'm going to say this in 2022, the way the LGBTQ plus, I don't know all the letters now, but the way that community, it seems way supportive. In a lot, like most cases, it seems like people are very supportive, like you said, about coming out and being who you are. So when we look back at that, I don't know that we were ready for what you and I are talking about in 1996 to be in a movie. If he'd have made that'd have been crazy, because it'd have been so looking into the future as to how much support people need in that community. So right. To me, that would have been the story if that could have been done.
Yeah, but I think watching this is just showing how much support everybody needs in general. You know,
yeah, just in general, it's
taken for granted, because obviously Alyssa.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. She's got these choices she has to make. Like, if she does follow her heart and she really is in love with Holden, look what she's giving up and what it's going to do to her life.
But it shouldn't. And that's what the thing is. And that's the story, is it shouldn't mess up your life. I think that's.
Yeah, to me, I think Banky too, honestly, you talk about his gay bashing, but I think he's just more jealous because he doesn't want to lose his friend.
Yeah. And I want to get into this.
And he wants to find a reason that they don't end up together.
I want to get into my last generic here, and that is the threesome. I do remember thinking back then how stupid that idea was for him then. And even now, but moreover, how manipulating it was to Banky. Well, I think now, looking at Banky, I'm a little cringe at some of the things he does. That it was manipulating his emotions. And I don't believe Banky had repressed desires for Holden.
I don't either.
I think his willingness was for the good of his friend. I think it was, if you think this will make you better, I care for you so much, I will participate in something that makes me want to throw up. Because what does he do once she says no? Thank God.
Thank Christ.
Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh. He was going to do something that he totally did not want to do. Not because he desired him in some secret way and he's secretly gay somehow, because that's kind of what they were trying to make you think. Like, he was wanting to be with him like that. But it was because I have this best friend and I want him to be better. And if this is what it takes, I guess I'll do it, you know?
Yeah, I think Holden's character throughout this movie, you want to look at him as a good guy in general, but I don't, you know, I think there's a lot of uninformed selfishness with him.
That's part of the juvenile aspect of this movie feeling.
Okay, I can fix this. I can make this better. I can make this work. I can come up with a solution for this. I am
the
artist.
He's the guy lost in the road.
I am the artist.
He's like, earlier we were talking
street signs ever,
you know, but he's the guy who didn't ask for directions for everything. Just like we were talking about earlier. He's like, I know the way to get there.
He's the guy not in that road. He's the guy in the middle of the four-way road.
Yeah. Yeah. I can
do
that.
Asking for directions to the $100 bill. That's
all you know what? Speaking about four-way roads, I didn't bring it up because this is, to me, it's cringe, but also was funny at the time, is the thing where there's a $1 million in the middle or whatever.
$100 bill,
and you have Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny.
A non-agenda, non-politically agenda friendly lesbian, a bitter of rage, man-hating dyke, Santa Claus, and the Easter Bunny.
And which one?
We'll get to the $100 bill first.
The man-hating dyke.
Why?
Because none of the other
three are figments of your fucking imagination.
That is, I get it, while it's clouded in, once again, bashing on gay people, because there are obviously different levels to humans. I'm sure there is the man-hating, what he calls the man-hating dyke. But then there's also a lot of probably very loving, caring lesbians who have no agenda. Their agenda is just to love whoever they're with, you know? So I think that's the funny part about that is that, but it's funny because he's trying to express what he feels. it's so awesome.
You want to know something though? I'm sorry. This is completely random and I don't hope this doesn't sound insensitive. I have no idea. This is just more of an observation.
Oh, wow.
I thought about this. And this is again, just from what you've seen,
I do bleach my anus.
What you've seen, yes, I know. What you've seen in film, in media.
Yeah.
You always have had that concept or idea or like how people are portrayed when they are talking about, you know, lesbians. Like they'll show one or the other, right?
Yeah.
As he described them.
Yeah.
Gay men. I've never seen a woman hating gay guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, oh, he's too effeminate. I hate those effeminate gay guys.
Right. We've never,
like, I've never seen that. You're right. Like, anything. If anything, you have the token gay friend.
Right.
And they're always liked. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I think that comes to the psyche of the male point of view, which is, you know, we don't. If we're super heterosexual, the last thing we want is to look at a woman who tries to be look like a man because she identifies more that way.
Right.
And we want to say, oh, man, she's just a man hater.
But then they're saying, yeah, if you're a lesbian, it's because you want to be a guy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but that's not the case. You can be a woman and be feminine.
Crazy.
Just like a man could be a man who loves football and just likes dudes. It happens, people. It does. It just does. And there's a movie coming out. That was coming out with a story about two gay men, and one of them is the more effeminate, and one of them is like a dude who works out and like sports, and that exists. So that's why it's out there. It's why I forget the name of that movie because I was watching Big Brother, and it was on. They made them watch it if they won something. So yeah, I didn't say this earlier. I want to go back to this. It's about the Jaws scene.
Yeah.
Because you talked about that earlier. I had a fact I forgot about. To Smith, the Chasing Amy's Jaw scene in which Alyssa and Bakey compare sex scars represented everything that is great about independent film, edgy and smart content that a studio would axe early on in the development stage. And I know whereof I speak, there was a version of this scene in Mallrats, and the studio made me take it out. Another scene in which Holden and Alyssa talk about true love while playing darts had originally been written as a conversation between Dante and Randall in Clerks, but Smith lost the notebook he wrote it in and had forgotten about it until finding the notebook again and obviously putting it in this movie. So, yeah, everything he does is he had written down, and it's funny that these scenes could have been in a whole different movie. How would this movie have gone if those scenes weren't in this? I mean, I don't even know.
I guess that he would have had a find his other notebooks that he,
because that dart scene is very pivotal
yeah,
to why he falls in love, and like, because they have that conversation, he thinks he shared a moment, you know, and then that's where it all starts from, really.
Oh, shared moment.
Are you doing the fingers together thing? Okay, that was part of the thing that Affleck was talking to him about when he was like his cues that he would do. That was one of the advice things that they gave you doing this.
Yeah.
It was weird. Like they had a talk to each other about that. And that was one of the things that he talked about doing. It's weird. I thought, wow, they really talked about everything. You'd think it's all improv, but not all of it is, especially in a Kevin Smith movie. So
I don't know.
Is there anything we've missed?
That this would have been a bunch of improv? Seemed pretty planned out.
You know, I say that, but that, you know who Judd Apatow is?
Right, yes, obviously. I do. Very, very well.
His movies are famously made with loose scripts, and he gives all the characters the latitude to improv a lot of it. And I think after going through all of his movies, when we look back at comedies, we didn't think that's how it may have been, always been done. But you're right. It probably wasn't. Everything was probably scripted. Nothing was improvisational. But
oh, I'm sure there was. No. I'm sure there was.
Yeah, but not like not like where you only have 40% of a script and then the other 60% is filled in by the people. That's kind of like how Judd Apatow's
movie. I think Kevin Smith is a great writer. I think he's just, when he's doing a movie, he writes the lines. Like, he knows how he wants the movie to go. But yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of,
like I said, his
changes in improv involved.
Before we do our ratings, I'll just say that's why, to me, when he sets these movies up, he sets them up for one scene, I always feel. And that was when Silent Bob delivers. And one of your favorite things, or mine, is when the movie's name is in the movie.
Yeah.
And he does the, you know, You're Chasing Amy, which ends up being the end of the movie, being the comic Chasing Amy. I think that thread was the best part of the movie. So there you go.
Yeah. But I do feel it is really kind of funny, though. Not funny, just interesting, where you have all that in Silent Bob, you know, the whole thing about how you can't deal with their past.
Yeah.
It's interesting because this is a whole different kind of ball game here, though, this particular situation. And at the same time, it's not.
Yeah.
Because I think that right there, and kind of to go against most of what you said today, which I'm always happy to do.
Yeah, you will.
You shouldn't be looking at it like that.
It's hard not to.
Well, whatever's hard for you.
Yeah. How do you check yourself, buddy?
Check your finger cuffs.
All right. Are you ready to rate this movie up?
I'm ready.
All right. Is it me or you first?
You go first, because I'm sure you're going to give a shitty score.
You know,
a bad reasoning behind it.
Okay, he's right. Back when I first watched this movie, I was much younger. And I've said this already, I was different headspace. Because I know it's because I was fond of this movie. I have fond memories of watching it, and I enjoyed it. But when you go back and you look at it and see how it's aged and a lot of the things that happen in it, some jokes land, some don't. Some of it to me is a dumpster fire. So... But there, you know, the one thing that Kevin Smith has is charm in his movies. It has his charm, has his feel, and it's dialogue driven and it's fun. You can enjoy that, but to me, ultimately, this is, I've already said this, like a 13-year-old boy in an awkward phase. It's got poorly formed opinions about sexuality to me and emotions, but there's a lot of really good things. So you know, I would love to give this like a super high score, but because of some of the poor things, I'm giving it just above average score, which is 13.5.
Wow. That's all I'm saying. We are done. Can't work like this.
Get to fucking work. Just do your review.
Christ. Okay, so... I also have fond memories watching this movie because I thought it was great. I think if you've ever seen An Evening with Kevin Smith, it's a stand-up he does at, this one was at Kent State, I believe. There's a girl in the audience that said she was a lesbian and she felt that Chasing Amy, that the message in there was that all girls really need is good, deep digging. Kevin Smith's rebuttal to that was, you have to understand that I put that line in Banky's mouth to deflate that whole argument. So I really do feel like you get out of this movie what you choose to get out of it. It's depending on how you view it. And, you know, if you have an open mind, the way you're watching it, there's definitely different ways to take different things in this movie, but it's a type of movie to me. It's controversial. There's a lot going on in there, but I think you have to, Kevin Smith set out to make it for certain reasons. He had a certain vision for it. So I do think that he accomplished what he wanted to out of that. That's how I take this movie. I think it's fantastic. I think, yes, there's definitely jokes that aren't great in here as far as being offensive, things like that, obviously. But that's part of the movie. That's part of the storytelling to it. So I'm not going to slam it for that at all. I do get, obviously, we're in a different age now as far as how you should be viewing things and how you should be saying things, without a doubt. But again, we're talking about the stupid character in here that obviously is clearly wrong, and you know that watching this, and you're supposed to know that when you're watching this. You're supposed to get that. So anyway, to me, I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. I think, especially after going from Clerks to Mallrats, to make a jump to telling a story like this, like, I think Kevin Smith, that, like, kudos for that. It was great. I'm giving it 22 cans. Saves the average a little bit, so now we're at 17.75.
Well,
Mike's stupid.
I'm not stupid. I'm not stupid. You make some good points there, but it is what it is. It is what it is.
It's, again, it's just like you're choosing to view it a certain way.
And here's the thing.
I get that. I'm not, you know, I get that.
I want to go, the one thing I didn't go into, which I thought about, was the budget was only $250,000. And this movie looks like it only had a $250,000 budget in some spaces. So the film, I didn't even go into like the actual just filming aspect and the quality of the work and the camera and things like that. That right there alone brings it down a little bit, but I didn't say that. I probably should have.
You know, I disagree. I think that movie
game where they're wearing the same collars, just movie, like one's wearing home, overall, one's wearing away.
I'm saying, yes, there's shit like that, but overall, that movie looks great for $250,000.
When and certain set pieces look great, certain set pieces don't. That's all. I'm just saying there is some quality issues on that just because of the budget was so low.
Because of the budget, right. But I think it looks fantastic
for that
budget.
But I didn't detract from it for that too much. I mean, it was more about other things. So I didn't even...
better than Clerks.
Actually, I think Clerks, the way it was filmed...
But that was for specific... Yes, it was supposed to be like that in budget reasons, too. No, I'm just...
It'd be like saying, oh, Blair Witch, I can't believe they filmed that movie that way. That's how it's fucking how it's supposed to be. Found footage, you know. It's different. So, that's what I'm saying. This is... I don't know. That's one of the things I could have said. But, hey, I appreciate it. What do we got here? What is it? What does... where does it sit in our...
17.75. So that's half a point below Boogie Nights that we just did, 18.25.
Boogie Nights, good movie.
Dirty Dancing, 17.5. So that's just below. Dirty Dancing is just below that. Let's see.
Is Dirty Dancing a worse movie than this?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Yes.
Based on my score, it's not.
Nope. You fucked up. You gave it 23 instead of 24. I would have put it over that.
Yeah, well, it's not a 24, but it's definitely a better movie. trust me, I love Kevin Smith and his movies. Do you think I would want Dirty Dancing to be better than a Kevin Smith movie? I would want Kevin Smith to make something that makes me think, this is definitely...
Hey, here you go. Serendipity, 17.75.
And what was our scores?
Huh? 16.5 for you, 19 for me.
That makes sense.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Serendipity. There you go.
Here's one that actually I think is fitting at 17.625. Trading Places.
I'll say Fast and Furious. What? No. Trading Places. Okay. Okay. And I probably had a lower score on that, didn't I?
No, you had 18.25. I had 17.
Oh, okay. I thought it might have been lower.
Let's see if there's any other matches. Benny and June, 17.75 on the nose.
I had a higher score on that, right?
You had 17.5.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So,
because that's I was about right. That's what that movie is. You were 18.
We'll throw in our Fast Five was 17.5,
which should have been higher.
No, it shouldn't.
It should be like a 19 or 20.
No, it shouldn't.
20, if it's my score alone.
Oh God, it was 20. Your score was 20.
I know. If it was my score alone, it'd be 20, but.
And if it was my score alone, JC Amy would be 22. So shut up.
Stop
ruining everything.
I'm not ruining. I'm being honest about my feelings. You not want me to be honest about my feelings?
Two more at 17.5.
So it's a big grouping.
That I think are interesting.
Yes.
Compared to Chasing Amy. Days of Thunder.
Ooh, but that's got
No.
Got but NASCAR. Like,
what I feel like is that these could also be titles for Chasing Amy.
Yeah, Days of Thunder.
And Can't Buy Me Love.
Oh, yeah. Can't Buy Me Those. Do you know what, though? When you think about it, this is about the right place. All those movies, very enjoyable, above average, but not home runs. Okay,
another one. Again, I just think it's funny. Would these titles also work with the movie? 15.75, Coming to America.
Or On, yeah.
Am I just reaching here?
Probably. Yeah, now you're just reaching. You're just reaching there a little bit. All right, that's are we ready?
wait, no, we're not. Last one. Sorry, another 17.75 on the nose. Armageddon.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to close my eyes. I don't want to fall asleep, baby. All right. We would
because
like.
I got to drill 800.
Yeah, I got a drill. Drill, baby. We would like to thank you for listening. We also want to remind you to join our Patreon so you can get some of that bonus content and other fun stuff. Remember, you can go to sodapopcultureclub.com for all things related to the show, including your chance to make movie suggestions and our episode schedules there as well. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and we have a Twitch channel. Now we want to give you a little tease as to what next week's movie may be. See if you can guess what it is.
Dishes are done, man.
And as always, we would like to thank you for listening. Is there anything else you have on your mind before we let these poor people go?
Plenty after that discussion, but I think we've unleashed everything we could today. Thank you guys again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
And if you want to enlighten us, if we've made some egregious statements in this particular movie review, you just let us know and send us an email. And it can be that mike@sodapopcultureclub.com. That's fine.
Hi,
Hi, it's Sheena Shea from Vanderpump Rules here to tell you guys about Factor. It's my one-stop shop for nutritious, fully prepared meals, which means there's no grocery shopping, no meal planning, and no cooking required. They have tons of options to choose from every week. Factor is like having a personal chef, but without the wait. It only takes 2 minutes to heat and eat. Plus, all their meals are fresh, never frozen. Visit factormeals.com/Shea40 for 40% off your first order.